Hey, wake up. New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
Why does it always feel like money has to be so hard? Isn't it just simple math? Well, let's talk about why it's more than just math when it comes to managing your money in today's episode. Welcome to Money Talk with Skylar Fleming, where we talk about money because there's more than just math to your finances. Let's get talking. Welcome to today's episode of Money Talk. I'm your host, Skylar Fleming. Join us today as we tackle the big questions in life, like why does money always seem to vanish faster than socks in a dryer? Today we're diving into the world of personal finance, as you know, but we're thinking about math. Really, math? Maybe you barely survived high school algebra, but fear not. Managing money is more than just crunching numbers, and that's what we're going to talk about today. It's about facing our fears, dodging unexpected expenses like a ninja, and understanding that sometimes it's okay to splurge on those extra things that you need. So grab your calculators or a comfy chair and let's talk about the mysteries of money so you can understand that you don't need a PhD in math. So let's turn the financial chaos into something really manageable. The money talking points for today's episode are: what other factors play into how we manage money besides just math? And 2, have you ever done a 90-day inspection and audit of your expenses? What did you learn from it? With the money talking points in mind, let's get talking. Hello, everybody. Welcome to today's interview on Money Talk with Skylar Fleming. Joining me today, I have Darla Bishop here. We're talking money and how it's more than just math. This is a saying that you've surely heard me say before because, well, it's more than just math. But before we get into that, Darla, would you introduce yourself for everybody?
Yes. Hey, everybody. I'm so happy to be here. My name is Darla Bishop. It's Dr. I have lived many lives for a few reasons. I am one of those, I don't know if you've ever heard the term multi-potentialite, where basically I am interested in all types of things. And so I found ways to put those into my life. So in my day job, I am a health care executive. I work for a health insurance company. I'm also a professor of health policy because that's what my training's in. But my life's passion that led me to write How to Afford Everything is I believe that working people should feel like they know how to afford everything that matters. And so it took me more than 120 books, reading and studying money and mindset and trying to understand how it all works together. And once I got to about book 75, I was like, it shouldn't be this hard. So I wrote my own.
Nice.
And hopefully I'll save someone some years and some tears on their journey towards being able to afford everything that matters.
Awesome. I like how that sounds. Years and tears. Let's get rid of those. So that's the whole goal.
Let's name a few.
Yes. The whole goal of Money Talks is to like help us speed up that journey. Like you said, it took you a bunch of books. So you wrote one to help people understand your experience. And then people can take what you've learned and apply it to their life and speed it up a little bit. That's the whole purpose. But that's fantastic. Awesome. Let's kick it off here. Let's get right into it with how easy would money be if it was just math?
A third grader could do it because actually most of the math involved in managing personal finance. Now, some business finance and maybe some of the investing gets a little more complex, but really it's plus, minus, multiply, divide. Mm-hmm. And you master that by the third grade. So what's that, an 8-year-old?
So yeah, it'd be something like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it would be like I say all the time, if it was just math, you wouldn't have to do anything because our supercomputers would have figured it out by now. Like,
right.
It'd be
especially with AI. Jeez. Mm-hmm. We'd all have budgets.
Right. We'd all have budgets and they would all work. But yeah, why don't they work? What else is there to consider?
So much of money isn't math because the way that we use money in this society, right? Like if we had built our society different where we valued things like sitting under the sun and trading mango, then it'd be a different story. But so much of what we're able to do with our time, with our energy, is shaped by how much money we do or do not have, right? Mm. And then we get the meaning of what money is and isn't passed down to us from our parents, from the adults in our life, from as we get older, from the other people that we interact with at school and work. And those all shape this definition of what money is and isn't in your life. And then if you're like me, where you've had many times of lack, where you know, you couldn't do something maybe as simple as eating enough or making sure that you had stable housing, or even something not as simple as you really wanted to go to a certain camp or a certain university, but the money wasn't there, then that also shapes how you feel about money as a tool, as an object that you have to use in your life. And so confronting what your view of money is first can help you get back to the point where the math can be simple.
And once you understand that, like you said, then the math gets simple because you're able to, and a story I've shared a couple times and I'll share here because it's a good one about the other things that matter is my wife right now is in PA school, and with that comes some student loans, and I am not directly, I guess, responsible for those loans in the same way she is. So for me, I'm like, let's optimize the math. Let's pay them off in the most optimized fashion, right? Save the most interest, invest the difference kind of stuff. And she's like, well, these loans actually make me feel like I have to work because they carry a little bit of a bigger weight on her. And once that clicked in my mind, I'm like, well, the obvious choice is to free you of that burden, because if it was just math, we would have gone my route, but there's so much else we need to consider. And that's a huge eye-opening experience once you get to that point.
Yeah, I share a similar story around debt. So when people are, and student loan debt feels a little bit different than consumer debt. So credit cards, car loans, in that there's an asset you've gotten that hopefully will pay dividends for years and decades to come because you've gotten training, you have built a network that will help your financial situation. Whereas a credit card or a car note might not do the same thing.
Yeah.
But 100% of the time, if I'm working with someone to figure out the debt piece to get rid of the debt, I 100% of the time use snowball method, even though the math tells us that avalanche is better. So for your listeners who maybe are coming to the first time and the terms, avalanche is take your debts and you rank them in order, highest interest to lowest interest, and you pay off the things with the highest interest first. Whereas snowball, you rank them in order based on dollar amount owed. So you might have a small bill of $100 up to big bills of several thousand, and you always start with the smallest dollar amount, regardless of what the interest rate is. And math tells us, well, we'd optimize this, we'd save more money over the course of this paying off debt project by paying off the highest interest things first. But if you need a win, if you haven't felt like you've been successful when it comes to money, you need a win as fast as possible to build that momentum, to build your confidence, to feel like, okay, I said I was going to do something and here's proof that I can do it, because I've already, within a few months of working on my debt, taken at least one, maybe two or three of those smaller debts off the board. They're gone forever.
Yeah. And if you continue to like think out the example of a snowball, how much fun is it as a kid when you get to that big snowball that's it's moving on its own kind of stuff? And that's what you're able to carry into paying off debt. You start with those small ones. You're like, well, that was easy. And then you're like, let's keep going. Let's take that money, apply it to the next one. And then you get to the end and you're like, how could I have possibly afforded a $2,000 payment in 1 month when you look back maybe 15 months ago and that would have been unheard of. So the motivation there is a big deal. And I really like that. It's just the better method if you need that motivation.
It is. It absolutely is. And if you look over long term, depending on how much debt you have, the math actually ends up not being all that different. But the way you feel about it, that feeling is night and day.
Yeah. And the math, like you said, it's not that much different. Maybe it's a little bit, but in the grand scheme, I think if you were to trade, if someone were to come up to you and say, I'll trade you $400 in optimized interest for this fiery motivation that you're going to have, it's an easy decision ultimately when it comes down to it. And I remember hearing, I want to say it was one of the Ramsey podcast hosts, that he said, when people come in thinking math, I go behavior. When they come in thinking behavior, I go math. And that's why it's so good to have these multiple perspectives to consider as we're working through our financial struggles. Let's get into your story a little bit more. I know you mentioned debt being part of your story. But what made you realize that there's more than just math to your money?
Well, I knew this really early on. I remember we had a car repair. I think I was, you know, maybe 10 or 12, like definitely big enough to be like a helper in the house, but not big enough to be working. And my mom had this car issue that meant that she couldn't work because she had the kind of job mm-hmm. that if she didn't go to work, she didn't get paid. It wasn't like she had vacation days and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so her missing that 2 or 3 days of work while she figured out pulling the money together for the car repair or getting to the weekend for the car repair, that threw off like 4 or 6 weeks of our life. Like there were a birthday yeah. party we had to cancel, you know, we were late on some bills, the pantry got a little light, a small car repair, which
mm-hmm.
wasn't a big dollar amount, but she had to really figure it out. And then it caused this kind of domino effect that affected us negatively for a month and a half. Yeah. And I remember thinking like, but it's just whatever the dollar amount, why don't we have that?
Mm-hmm.
But I saw that it wasn't just the dollars. And so that how she felt about it, her worry about her job by having to miss work, the having to kind of negotiate with family members around, well, could mm-hmm. you watch the kids or could I borrow or could I, like seeing all of the things that what in the grand scheme was actually a small dollar amount to make the repair created. I was mm-hmm. like, okay, so it's not just simple dollars and cents. There's more to yeah. it.
There's a lot more to it. And it speaks to the power of an emergency fund. It also speaks to the impact of car dependency, but that's a completely separate topic that if my wife's listening to this, she's going to say, don't get them started. So that's a separate issue. But let's come back to maybe the importance of the emergency fund and how that helps you with the behavior, not only pre-small emergency, like you've said, where it gives you that mental safety net, but How much more relief would there have been in your family if there would have been that small safety net?
That's right. Part of the reason it's called a savings account is because it saves you from drama. It saves you from heartache. It saves you mm-hmm. some amount of pain or friction. And so having an emergency fund does so much for you. And the thing that I have to say about emergency funds is, you know, conventional wisdom is that you should have 3 to 6 months expenses. If you're pulling yourself out of whatever financial struggle you've been in for a while, that feels like a mountain you could never climb. So the first step is if that is too big, don't worry about that. The first thing to do is put $500 into an account. Because while $500 doesn't say save or solve every problem, it buys you a little bit more time to get to a different solution. Right? It gives you a day or two to figure out what to do next to solve the bigger problem. And then once yeah. you have that 500, get to 1,000. And like when you have $1,000 in the bank, if you've never had $1,000 in the bank, good. And then you start playing this game, it actually becomes gamified. Like how much mm-hmm. more could I put in there? Could I get to 1,500? Could I get to 2,000? And so again, you spark that motivation and you feel the relief that when something happens, you're like, that was really inconvenient versus yeah. it ruining your life, you know? And that's a great feeling for something yeah. that previously ruined your life is now just inconvenient.
Yeah. And that's the way I describe an emergency fund perfectly is it turns those emergencies into slight inconveniences. Like I ride my bike to work every day. I've had so many flat tires. Now flat tires for a bike are a lot cheaper than a car, but, if you have that emergency fund, that's, I just got to run to the tire shop real quick, get it fixed. But even like you're saying, that small $500 amount, I think like that's enough to put a deposit if you're in good, like if you're in good graces with the car dealer or someone knows someone, you're like, I can give you $500 right now if you'll fix it and let me drive it. And then I can get back to work and pay you back. So it gives you so much flexibility just in that small amount. It really does.
That's right.
So what are other things that we need to consider when we're trying to manage our money? We're mentioning emergency funds, savings account, which I really liked your connection between savings and saving us. So that's a really good one. But what are some other things that we need to consider when it comes to managing our money?
One of the things that people might not even know they don't know is it's not the day-to-day things that throw people's budgets off. And like for so many people, budgets are a bad word, kind of like diet, where, well, I've tried that before. It never works for me. I can't follow a budget. I've never been successful. But part of it is because there are these irregular or periodic expenses that come up that feel like they only happen every once in a while, but they actually happen more often than we think. Think about it. If you look at your calendar for the next, say, 3 months, how many people in your life have a birthday that you will probably want to celebrate in some way, whether that means getting them a gift, taking them to dinner, doing something for them? How many people in your life, yourself included, have an anniversary that you may need to celebrate? If you have school-age children, you know, how many field trips or donut days or popcorn days will come up where you'll need to throw a few dollars at that, you know? And we forget to add those in when we make a budget for the first time, or if we've not been in the money zone for a while, we say, okay, rent or mortgage, utilities, whatever it costs me for car and gas, groceries. But you didn't put in that, you know what, for your life, you need to eat out 2 times a week because of your schedule, because of your energy. And so build that in, you know, don't should on yourself like, well, my budget would be better if I just, you caught that?
Yes, I got you. Yeah.
Yeah. Don't should on yourself. Well, my budget would be better if we would just stop eating out. But that might not be practical, right? Like, I have a friend who is a single mom, and I know that those two dining out nights per week is probably what saves her sanity. That's two nights that she doesn't have to cook and she doesn't have to fight with her kids about what they're going to eat. And so put it in the budget. What will it take you to actually live a life that day to day, week to week, month to month, full of ease? Like, and put it in. Put it in. Don't make yourself live a hard life because you think you should have a smaller budget. Figure out what it truly costs you to live and then make your budget rise to that. And so that might mean, if it costs you $3,000 to live and you're bringing in $2,500, then you got to go find $500. But knowing that you got to go find $500 feels like a challenge, feels like a quest, right? It feels way easier than trying to cut $500.
Yeah, you can always make your income grow. And it is important to watch your expenses. Of course, we don't want to be like frivolous with our money, of course. But I do like the emphasis I'm putting in those things that are kind of your real life. My wife and I, when we budget, we say, okay, what's the events, like you said, those periodic things coming up in the month? And then that's kind of the first thing we'll do. And we'll just write those down just so they're in our mind. Because if we were to forget about, oh, we're going with my wife's family next week to a hike that's quite a drive, like it's kind of a specific thing we want to go do. So if we didn't budget in a little bit extra gas money, then we're at the end of the month thinking, oh, our budget's ruined. It's the end of the world because you didn't make it. But if we're honest, that just helps so much.
That's right. And if you've never done this before, the way that you do it is you take 90 days and you look back. And you look back. So you look at your bank statement, you look at your credit card statements if you have any, and you look at your Venmo feed and whatever, and your Cash App feed to see who you've been trading money with and for what reason. And just say, and be real curious about it. Don't should on yourself. I can't believe I spent the money and, oh, I'm such a loser or I'm such an idiot. No. You are a detective and you are going on an investigation and you're approaching this with curiosity. I wonder where my money went.
Yeah. I like that. It's kind of just look at the past. Also, I like, don't be hard on yourself for the past. It already happened. So like, what good is it going to do to beat yourself up over it? But then you can take that 90 days and then you can bring it to a money meeting. Something I encourage people to do regularly, whether they're married or not, because it's important to be aware of our finances. How do you think? Money meetings, money talks with spouses, or maybe even a friend if you don't have a spouse, how are those helpful?
Oh, money meetings are the best. And I'll tell you what, I've been married for 11 years and we have been doing money meetings for almost 15 because early in our relationship, it was clear to the person who's now my spouse that like money was kind of my thing. And this is something we should probably like talk about all the time. I was like, yes, I would love that. And we transitioned from starting with the money to now we actually start with our life, which is, if I would tell my younger self and the people listening, is do that. And so we actually first look at the calendar together. Hey, what's happening this month? What's happening next month? What's happening the month after? Do we have any travel? Do we have any big celebrations? And then we say, okay, and on top of our normal bills, how do we make the money work for all of those great things happening in our lives? And is there anything new we want to do? Is there something we're ready to get rid of? Because everything we do, for better or worse, has a money and a time consequence.
Mm-hmm.
And so talk about it and make a plan, because looking ahead and making a plan makes it that much easier to accomplish, to get through, and to have a great time doing it. And if this isn't natural for you, I get that. If you're not naturally a planner, let me tell you a secret. The more you do it, the more natural it becomes.
Yeah, the more you budget and plan, my wife and I have been doing it for years, and our first couple there were tears involved, things like that. As I adjusted to understand how my wife reacts to money, how she grew up with it, you really learn so much by learning how people are in a relationship with money, because it carries some heavy weight for people, and that's just, it's important to know. And those money talks, like you said, they get better, they become easier, they become faster if you're worried about how long they take. If you're tired of the 3-hour budget meeting, just push through it a little bit longer and it'll get there. But I love it. I love money talks. I love like telling people to talk about money, because it just becomes a fun conversation.
Mm-hmm.
How do we get past the math when we are trying to help people? So I can sit down and look at my friends and be like, hey, here's what you're missing. You're spending too much here. It's kind of obvious. Come on, do better. But I'm just looking at the math. I'm not looking at the behavior as to why they're spending that way or why they're doing X, Y, or Z. How do we get past just trying to shove the math down people's throats if we want to help them out?
You got to ask them in a way, and especially if this is someone who's in your life, hopefully you know how to ask it. Well, what's really important? You know, what makes you feel good? What makes your day or your week go really smooth? And then tie that back to the math. Well, would it go smoother if you had this? Do you want to figure out the math to make that work better? You know, do you have options? It seems like you're spending a lot of time and money on this stuff, but you don't even care about that stuff. Can we shift it? How would we shift it? What needs to happen to make that shift happen, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so to bring in the feelings, and like, we don't always like to talk about our feelings, but starting there will actually make the math, again, go back to the simple part of the plus, minus, add and subtract.
Yeah, I love that. Bring in the feelings. It's kind of, if you're just going in guns blazing with the math and you scare someone off, help them connect with it. I love that. That's fantastic. But oftentimes, maybe your friend doesn't want help, but you know they need it. And how do you get to the point, or how do you help people fix financial problems when they may not be asking for help right away?
Well, the good news is that everyone has their own relationship with money. As a friend, if their financial situation isn't directly impacting you, it's kind of none of your business.
Yeah.
So the way that you can handle that is you can leave hints and tips and tools and make sure that they know that if they ever want to shift something, that you're there to help them in the way that works for you, and leave it alone. Because sometimes people have to get there in their own time. And just because you have a relationship with someone as their friend or their coworker or even their family member, you don't know all the things they're managing. There may be some things just outside of your point of view that you don't know about that they can't change yet. Mm-hmm. And so offer the support, let them know that you're available when they're ready, and kind of leave it alone.
And I dealt with that when I started this podcast, because I was telling everyone, oh, look at this tool. You guys should all do this. You guys should all check out this budgeting technique. I would catch those hints of money conversations, and I would just try to force it down their throats by diving into it. And it just didn't go well, because frankly, they were fine in their situation. And like you said, it was none of my business. So I needed to back off a little bit. So avoid, I guess, that eagerness to help, but be willing to help, because you don't want to just scare people off of your friendship, I guess, by bombarding them with your good advice and opinions. So,
right.
Fantastic. This has been a fun conversation. We're racing right to the end here. There's a couple questions as we're going to finish. The first one's going to be, how can people find or contact you? And then the last one, to give you a second to think about it, is, what is one thing you wish you would have known sooner when it comes to money? But first, how can people get a hold of you?
Oh, the easiest way to find me is at my website, darlabishop.com. There you can find all of my social handles, more about the book, lots of free resources. I have a whole resource center with lots of awesome things that you can take that I want you to have for free. In fact, my husband tells me I give too much away for free, but whatever, I'm good. It's fine. Take it. Because I truly desire to be surrounded by people who are happy, whole and wealthy, because if I'm surrounded by those people, maybe I am too.
Yes. Awesome. What would you tell your younger self if you could now about something you wish you had known sooner with money?
Just start. Don't worry about getting it perfect. Don't worry about getting it exactly right. Just start on the path of fixing your money and it'll all go the way it is. And when you get stuck, look for help. If you don't know people who can help you, there are thousands of books on this topic. There are blogs, there are online resources. And so you don't have to do it by yourself. You can get help to figure out the money.
Awesome. And there's a great podcast out there called Money Talk with Skylar Fleming. So go check it out, everyone. Share it with your friends. Darla, thank you so much for coming on. I had a great time with this conversation. That was a fun one to dive into. So thanks for helping opening up the world of how money is more than just math.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much to Darla Bishop for coming on today's episode and talking about what there is to know about money that's beyond just the simple math. I want to start off here by talking about the money talking points. The first one is, what other factors play into how we manage money besides just math? Well, there's a lot of them. We talked about them in today's interview, so I'm not going to go through the laundry list of things again, but remember that there's more than just math when it comes to money, and that's a good thing. Understand that you don't just have to be an expert in math. There's more to it. There's behavior, there's emotions, there's relationships, things like that. The second money talking point is, have you ever done a 90-day inspection and audit of your expenses? What did you learn from it? I think that this one could be a really great thing to ask your friends. And often I think most people are going to say, no, I've never done a 90-day inspection. So I'd recommend going and doing that first. Look over the last 3 months of your expenses, write down what you learned from it, because I guarantee you're going to learn something from it. And then you can educate your friends or educate your spouse or whoever on what you learned and encourage them to do it, and then have a money talk. Today's two money talking points are going to be some great ones to discuss with a friend. So be sure to share today's episode and have a money talk with a friend. But I want to get into next of the other things to consider besides math. We'll talk about that next. What else is there to consider besides math when it comes to managing our money? Well, you have to consider that maybe you've inherited some of your money views. Our perception of money is often passed down from previous generations. The way you're thinking about money might not even be your own true belief. It's just what you were told. A great example of this is people who lived through the Great Depression. And so maybe it's your grandparents or great-grandparents that lived through the Great Depression, and they love to have cash. Why do they have cash? Who knows? I don't use cash at all. I don't know the last time I used cash to pay for something, and that's okay. But the previous generations love to have cash on them. There's all sorts of influential factors that influence our feelings about money. Was money scarce? Were banks in trouble, like in the Great Depression, so that people felt like they have to have cash on them because of that? What kind of things have influenced how you handle money? Do you not like to keep money in Venmo because it's been hacked before and you had some money stolen or something like that? Do you not trust selling things to people off of Facebook Marketplace or something like that because you've been scammed or things like that? Those are all influential money factors that we need to consider when it comes to thinking about our money beyond just the math. We also need to consider about the behavioral and psychological aspects. Like I was just saying, you need to confront and understand your own views about money. A great one that talks about behavioral and psychological aspects is the debt snowball method. The debt snowball method illustrates how behavior and motivation impact financial decisions. While mathematically it may not seem optimal, it does offer great long-term benefits to foster and keep you motivated on a very hard journey to get out of debt. I'd love to hear your real life examples, but I'm going to share one of mine real quick. But if you're on Spotify where you can listen to this podcast, they actually have a comment feature now. So go leave a comment on there. What's an example in your life where you were able to have a financial safety net or where money was more than just math? Because I want to tell a story real quick. Car issues can often cause weeks of financial strain. It's important to know that when your car breaks down, there's more than just math being impacted. Maybe you don't have the money to cover it right now, but it's impacting so many other areas of your life. That's one key way that money can be more than just math, because you now need money to get groceries. You need money to get to your job all because your car is broken down. This is where a small savings account and playing into the math side of things can help you out a ton in the stress and friction. Emergency funds are essential. 3 to 6 months of expenses is ideal, but even $500 can provide a safety net. What if you're maybe late a couple of days because stuff was happening at home and your boss is on the edge of firing you, and then your car breaks down and that's completely out of your control? Now you lose your job. Now you're in a life turning, things are whirling around you, you get kicked out of your apartment all because you didn't have a safety net behind you. And I know there's a lot of circumstances that could play into this, but I'm trying to drill into you the importance of having somewhat of a safety net behind you so that we can transform potentially life-ruining experiences into mere inconveniences just by being a little bit prepared. A personal story here for me and my wife is we had a screw in our car tire. I even went out and looked at the tire beforehand and could not find it. So we're like, let's drive 45 minutes to Salt Lake City for a jazz game. And by the time we got down the freeway about 15, 20 minutes, the air pressure seemed to be leaking a little faster than I was comfortable with. I knew it may have needed inflated on our way home, but it was going down a little quicker than I was liking. So we got off the freeway, thankfully. It didn't blow out or go completely flat. Got to a parking lot. Boom, right there it was. The screw. And now we're stuck, right? We're stuck. We don't know where to go. It's not leaking air too fast. We obviously don't want to drive all the way down to Salt Lake and get stuck there. So we find a nearby Walmart that has a tire repair kit. We drive over there, take the screw out, buy the repair kit, and now the tire is flat. And now it's a pain because we don't have a jack. Thankfully, someone nearby had a jack for us. So that was super nice of them. But the story goes that we get home and now we're like, great, now we need to get some new tires. So I order two new tires because I'm like, oh, we only really need the back two. The front two are pretty fine. We get to the store. My wife takes the car in and they suggest, yeah, replace all four. And of course they're going to say that, right? They want to sell more tires. But thankfully we were okay with that because of our car repair fund, which we keep in place for things like this. And it helps that we also have a real emergency fund as a backstop to that because the four tires were more expensive than our small car repair fund that we use for oil changes and things like that. But thankfully, we were able to be okay with them upselling us to four tires. That was completely fine. And they got us a cheaper deal. It worked out. But thankfully, because we had some money in the bank and that safety net there, everything worked out to be really just fine. But that does it for some of the things to consider when it comes to thinking about math and how it's more than just math with our money. But next, I want to talk about something we talked about in today's interview, and that's money meetings. There's going to be some great insight that you're going to learn just coming up about how you can get started with money meetings. So how can you get started with money meetings? Well, make sure they're regular. Whether you're single or married, regular money meetings can be highly, highly beneficial. Start by reviewing your calendar and upcoming events before diving into your budget, because that makes it a whole lot easier rather than when you're in the middle of the month and you're like, well, shoot, I knew about this birthday 20 years ago when I became friends with this person, but why didn't I think to budget for it? Stuff like that just sneaks up on you, right? But if you look at the month ahead, you're going to be able to understand the time and money consequences that your upcoming events and calendar, and it's going to make your budgeting so much more manageable and honestly enjoyable. You're going to be able to get to a point where budgeting is fun. Another great benefit of regular money meetings is that you can inspect and audit. You can begin a thorough inspection and audit your last 90 days of expenses. That's a great place to start if you've never done something like this. Also, 90 days is about how long you want to give it before you start getting worried about if you don't like budgeting or not, right? You want to give it at least 3 months because that's enough time to get into the swing of things. Make sure you're honest and realistic with yourself. Realize that you need to plan for irregular or periodic events such as birthdays, anniversaries, school events, school fundraisers, church fundraisers, things like that. Build these into your budget. Avoid the financial strain that they bring when someone needs $50 for a fundraiser in order for your kids to go to camp or something like that. Be honest with yourself about your spending and budgeting needs. Make sure you take practical steps to create a realistic budget. Like we've been talking about this whole episode, be honest with yourself. Understand that there's more than just the math to figuring out where your money should go. You need to regularly review your calendar, your budget, things like that, so that you can understand what else goes into managing your personal finances. But of course, you still need to understand the math, and I want to talk about that next. Why is it so important to still understand the math when it comes to our money? Well, because fundamentally, finance is simple. It's pretty straightforward. It is basic math. You got plus, minus, division, multiplication. Easy stuff, right? Like Darla Bishop said in today's interview, that's third grade type stuff. And while business or investing can be a little bit more complex, personal finance is mainly just simple math and you can understand it. You're probably listening right now saying, oh, but it's hard. And yes, there's more than just math to your finances. I fully acknowledge it. That's what this whole episode is about. But still, at the root of your finances is simple math. Being able to minus your expenses from your income and making sure that number is still positive is really all you have to do. There's more that you have to consider into what goes into those expenses. But remember, it's simple math and you can do it. While math is essential, of course, remember the behavior we've been talking about this whole episode. If you need a great example of how behavior is important, look at the debt snowball. It's such a much better tool for people than the debt avalanche. Even though the debt avalanche saves you more money, it might not save you a whole lot. And maybe it's not going to save you enough that it's worth the motivating differences between the debt snowball and the debt avalanche. But make sure you connect math and reality. You need to understand what's truly important to make sure your day goes smoothly and make sure you're actually paying for the things that you enjoy. And then you can build a more practical and effective financial plan. Incorporate those feelings of honesty into your financial discussions and your money talks to foster that deeper understanding and commitment to your financial goals. So make sure you're just being honest. Understand that the math is simple, but there's more than just math that goes into your finances. And that does it for today's episode. We'll wrap it all up next. There you have it, ladies and gentlemen. We've journeyed through the land of personal finances, dodging the math nightmares and uncovering the secrets to turning financial chaos into smooth sailing. Remember, managing money isn't just about numbers. It's about understanding your relationship with money, planning for those pesky, unexpected expenses, and maybe even finding joy, yes, joy, in budgeting. You heard me right there. But now let's put it into action. We're going to start by picturing a life where financial stress is as rare as finding that coveted parking spot right by the entrance. Imagine having your emergency fund that turns the big life drama into minor inconveniences. It's possible, and it all starts with you taking the first step today. So here's your mission. Share this episode with a friend who's still convinced that budgeting is a modern form of torture, because it's not. Trust me, they'll thank you later. Let's spread the word, start conversations, and turn financial management from a dreaded chore into a shared adventure. Hit the share button and let's make the world a little smarter about money. Until next time, keep those calculators handy. And remember, the only math we truly hate is the math that tells us we can't afford the extras on our burger. But thank you again for Darla Bishop for coming on today's episode. That was a fantastic money talk. But thank you for listening to Money Talk with Skylar Fleming. I'm your host, Skylar Fleming. Have a great week.
Thank you for listening to Money Talk with Skylar Fleming. This show is provided for informational and entertainment purposes and may not be specific to your unique situation. Please be sure to do additional research before making any financial decisions.